Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into a case that shows, sometimes even the simplest questions can turn into these huge legal battles. Like, have you ever stopped to think about who actually owns the assets when you've got a partnership, especially if one of those partners ends up filing for bankruptcy?
That's exactly what we're looking at today. It's a case called In Res Fulton, and it really highlights just how complicated things can get when you've got bankruptcy law and partnership law all tangled up together.
So give us the rundown. What's the story behind this case?
Okay, so picture this. We're in Tennessee, and we've got a trucking partnership called C&F Trucking.
Okay, sounds simple enough so far.
Right. There are two partners involved. One is Paget Carroll, and he's the one who put up the money, the capital for things like their semi truck. And then there's Walter Charles Fulton Sr. He's the one who actually did the driving.
Okay, so pretty standard partnership setup. One guy's got the money, the other guy's got the skills.
Yeah, exactly. Seems pretty straightforward, right? But then here's where it gets interesting. Carroll's grandmother, Maddie Holcomb, loans him $9,000 personally.
Okay, now I can see where this might start heading into murky territory.
You got it. So Carroll takes $4,600 of that loan and uses it to buy a used trailer for the business. Now, at this point, you might think, well, what's the big deal?
Right, like it's just the trailer part of the business.
But hold on, because here comes the twist. Some time passes, and Fulton ends up filing for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And get this, he initially tries to claim the trailer as his own personal asset, trying to protect it from the whole bankruptcy process.
Oh, that's a bold move. Did it work?
Not exactly. Later on, he actually changes his mind and tries to claim a much smaller amount of it as exempt.
So he backtracked a bit.
Yeah, you could say that. But this whole back and forth really raised some red flags for the bankruptcy trustee, a woman named Jane Forbes.
I bet. Sounds like something's fishy.
Exactly. She stepped in to challenge Fulton's claim, arguing that the trailer actually belonged to the partnership, not to Fulton personally.
So now we've got ourselves a good old-fashioned trailer tug-of-war. What happened next? How did the court deal with this whole mess?
Well, the court really had to dive deep into Tennessee partnership law to figure out what the partners actually intended when they bought that trailer way back when.
So we were trying to get into their heads, figure out what they were thinking back then.
Exactly. And this is where it gets really interesting. Remember that $4,600 Carroll used from his grandmother's loan? Well, the court decided to view that as his capital contribution to the partnership, which, further supports the idea that the trailer was always meant to be part of the business.
Okay, hold on. I'm a little confused. How can money from a personal loan be considered a contribution to the partnership?
That's a great question, and it really gets to the core of the legal thinking here. The court focused on how the money was used, not where it came from. So, because Carroll used those funds to buy an asset specifically for the partnership, it became a capital contribution.
Oh, I see. So even though the loan itself was personal, the purpose of the loan was for the business.
Precisely. But there's more to it than just that. The documents for the trailer itself were pretty important, too.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, both the invoice from the company they bought the trailer from, Fruhoff Corporation, and the certificate of title from Arkansas, both listed C&F Trucking as the owner.
Wow, so the paperwork was pretty clear-cut.
Yeah, you could say that. Those documents were like a slam dunk for Carroll's side of the argument.
That's a good lesson for anyone in a partnership to make sure everything's documented clearly from the get-go.
Absolutely. This case is a perfect example of how meticulous record keeping can really be a lifesaver when legal disputes arise.
So, with all this evidence piled up against him, what happened to Fulton and his claim on the trailer?
Well, it actually gets even more complicated because when Fulton filed for bankruptcy, that triggered the automatic dissolution of the entire partnership according to Tennessee law.
Oh, wow. I bet that threw a real wrench in things.
You're right. And now, because of this, Tennessee has this very specific set of rules that's all laid out in their legal code that dictates exactly how partnership assets get divided up when something like this happens.
So what happens to the trailer? Does it just automatically become part of Fulton's personal stuff in the bankruptcy?
That's the million-dollar question. And the answer is, well, you'll have to wait for part two to find out.
Right. Welcome back to the Deep Dives. So last time, we ended on a pretty big cliffhanger, right? We've got this trucking partnership, C&F Trucking, going through a messy dissolution because one of the partners, Fulton, filed for bankruptcy. And in the middle of all this is this disputed trailer. Did Fulton manage to keep the trailer as part of his personal assets?
He did not. The court ended up siding with the partnership. They said, nope, the trailer is not part of Fulton's bankruptcy estate.
Yeah, I had a feeling that might be the outcome. But what was it that really made the court decide that way? I mean, Fulton seemed pretty set on keeping that trailer for himself.
Yeah, he definitely did. But you know, that whole system we talked about for how you divide up the assets in a partnership when it dissolves, that's a really important part of how the court came to their decision.
Right, right. Can you remind me how that all works again? Who's first in line when it comes to getting paid?
Okay, so first up, you've got to take care of any outside creditors. You know, the folks the partnership owes money to.
Makes sense. Got to pay the bills first. What happens after that?
After that, you've got any loans that the partners themselves might have made to the business, you know, beyond their initial investment.
Oh, right. So it's not just about the money they put in at the start, but also any extra funds they might have lent to keep things running. Then what?
Then, and only then, you look at those initial investments, the capital contributions from each partner.
Ah, that's where Carol's semi-truck and that $4,600 for the trailer would come in.
Exactly. And then finally, if there's anything left over after all that, after all the debts and contributions are taken care of, that's when the partners can split the profits amongst themselves.
So this system basically makes sure everyone gets treated fairly based on how much they contributed to the partnership,
right?
And also how much risk they took on.
Exactly. You got it. And that's exactly the system that the court followed very carefully when they were making their decision about the trailer in Refulton. It really shows how dedicated they were to making sure everything was fair and that they were upholding the principles of partnership law, even when you've got this complicated bankruptcy case happening at the same time.
It's really interesting to think about how this case kind of puts Fulton's personal bankruptcy and the partnership's dissolution in a sort of head-to-head situation. Like, who's going to win out in this legal tug of war?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's like a tug of war. And in this case, the partnership ended up being the stronger side because of Tennessee law and how it looks at those partnership assets and the folks who are owed money.
This whole situation really highlights something important for lawyers who work with businesses, don't you think? You can't just assume that when one partner files for bankruptcy, the bankruptcy trustee automatically gets to take control of all the partnership's assets.
Oh, absolutely. That's a super important distinction to make. The bankruptcy trustee only gets control of the debtor's interest in the partnership, not over specific partnership assets. It's subtle, but it makes a huge difference in a case like this.
So even though Fulton filed for bankruptcy, the trustee couldn't just come in and say, hey, that trailer's part of Fulton's estate now, right?
Exactly. The trailer was considered a partnership asset, so it had to be dealt with according to partnership law, specifically the rules around dissolving a partnership. The court made sure the trailer was handled according to those rules and wasn't just lumped in with Fulton's personal bankruptcy stuff.
It's amazing how partnership law and bankruptcy law can sometimes be in conflict with each other, isn't it?
It really is. And in Refulton is a perfect example of how those two areas of law can overlap and sometimes even clash. For lawyers who are advising partnerships, it's a real cautionary tale. They need to understand how those laws work together to protect everyone's interests.
I bet a lot of lawyers just assume that once a partner files for bankruptcy, the trustee can just do whatever they want with everything, including property owned by the partnership. This case really proves them wrong.
Oh yeah, for sure. It would be total chaos if bankruptcy trustees could just seize partnership assets without even considering the partnership agreement or state laws that govern partnerships. It would completely undermine the entire foundation of partnership law.
It would be like the Wild West of finance. Luckily, we have legal systems in place to make sure everything gets handled fairly. And that's exactly what the court did in Refulton. In Refulton, they made sure that the trailer was treated according to the rules of partnership law.
Exactly. This case really highlights the importance of courts being thorough and precise when they're applying the law. And it shows how understanding those specific legal rules, like the one in Tennessee about dividing up partnership assets, can have a huge impact on how a case turns out.
Speaking of that Tennessee provision, I think it's worth spending a bit more time on that. It seems like it played a pretty central role in this whole case. Can you walk us through exactly what it says and how the court used it to reach their decision?
Of course. That provision is Section 61-1-139 of the Tennessee Partnership Act. And basically, it sets out a very clear order for how partnership assets should be distributed when a partnership dissolves. Think of it like a step-by-step guide.
Okay, so the first step is to pay off any outside creditors, right? The people or businesses that the partnership owes money to.
Exactly. The law prioritizes those outside creditors. It makes sure they get paid in full before anyone else gets a share of the partnership assets.
That makes sense. It's like making sure all the bills are paid before anyone starts dividing up the profits. But what happens if there's not enough money to pay everyone back?
Well, that's where this hierarchy becomes even more important. So after those outside creditors, the next group in line are any partners who loaned money to the partnership, above and beyond their initial investments. So let's say a partner lent the business some extra cash to cover a shortfall or something, those loans would be settled next.
I see. So it's not just about what you contributed at the very beginning, but also any extra support you gave to the partnership along the way.
Exactly. And then after those loans are taken care of, then you get to those capital contributions, those initial investments that each partner made to get the partnership up and running in the first
Well,
place.
that's where Carol's semi-truck and that $4,600 for the trailer would come in.
You got it. And finally, if there's anything left over after all the debts are paid and all the contributions are returned, that's when the partners divide the remaining money as profit.
The system is so well thought out, it's really impressive. It makes sure that everyone gets treated fairly based on their contributions and the risk they took on for the partnership.
You're absolutely right. And the fact that the court in Rick Fulton followed the system so carefully really shows their commitment to being fair and to upholding the principles of partnership law. Even in a complicated case like this that also involves bankruptcy, they made sure those principles were followed.
All right, let's play devil's advocate for a second. What if the court had decided to rule in favor of Fulton? What if they had said the trailer could be part of his personal bankruptcy estate?
Ooh, that's a really interesting question. If that had happened, it would have completely thrown off the whole system we've been talking about. It would have meant that Fulton's individual creditors would have been prioritized over the partnership's creditors.
And Carol, the other partner, would have been left in a really tough spot, right?
Oh, absolutely. Not only would he have lost a key asset for the partnership, but he might not have even gotten his initial capital contribution back. Talk about adding insult to injury.
This case in Ree Fulton really drives home the point that personal finances and partnership finances should always be kept separate. It's easy to let those lines get blurred, especially in a small business, but this case shows just how much trouble that can cause.
Couldn't agree more. This is such a valuable lesson for both partners and the lawyers who advise them. Keeping good records and having a well-written partnership agreement are absolutely crucial for handling tricky situations like this and making sure everyone involved is protected.
This has been a truly fascinating deep dive into Inra Fulton, wouldn't you say? We've looked at how bankruptcy law and partnership law can intertwine. We've uncovered some important legal provisions, and we've even gotten some practical tips for anyone who's involved in a partnership. But we're not done yet. In part three, we're going to zoom out a bit and look at the bigger picture implications of this case and think about what kind of lasting impact it might have on legal practice. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've spent the last two parts really digging into this fascinating case in Ree Fulton. It really shines a light on, how messy things can get when you've got partnership law and bankruptcy law colliding.
It's wild, right? You start with this seemingly simple question about who owns a trailer, and it just spirals into this complex legal battle. But there are so many lessons we can take away from this case, even if we're not dealing with trailers or trucking partnerships.
Exactly. One of the biggest takeaways from in Ree Fulton has got to be, for legal professionals and anyone in a partnership, really, the importance of crossing your T's and dotting your I's when it comes to documentation.
Seriously, I mean, think back to those invoices and that certificate of title. Those documents, while they might seem boring, they were absolutely crucial for Carol. If he hadn't had those, who knows how the court might have interpreted things?
It's almost like those documents were like silent witnesses, right?
Yep.
Giving the court solid proof of what the partners intended way back when they bought that trailer.
Exactly. It just goes to show how important it is for lawyers to really emphasize meticulous record keeping to their clients. We're not just talking about keeping things tidy for tax purposes, you know. Having a clear paper trail can literally make or break your case in a legal battle.
Especially when you're dealing with something as high stakes as bankruptcy, right?
Oh, absolutely. And this case also really emphasizes the need for rock solid partnership agreements, especially when you've got personal funds and partnership funds mixed up together.
Yeah, we touched on this a bit earlier, but it's worth repeating. Having that well-drafted partnership agreement can be a lifesaver. It spells out who owns what and what happens if the partnership dissolves. It's like having like a legal roadmap for navigating those tricky situations.
Exactly. It can save everyone a ton of headaches and legal fees down the line.
And in a case like in Rafulton, when you have one partner declaring bankruptcy, having a solid partnership agreement can really protect the partnership's assets, right? It protects the other partners too. It creates this framework for stability, even when you've got this bankruptcy storm brewing.
For sure. And, you know, in Rafulton is also a bit of a warning sign, right? It shows what can happen when you blur the lines between your personal finances and your business finances, even in a small partnership.
It's easy to fall into that trap, I think, especially when it's a small operation. You think, oh, it's just us. We can be casual about it. But this case shows how badly that can backfire.
No kidding. As lawyers, it's part of our job to educate our clients about the potential pitfalls of mixing funds. We need to encourage them to keep separate bank accounts, be really meticulous with their record keeping, and just generally treat the partnership as its own separate legal and financial entity.
This case really does have these broader lessons that go way beyond partnership law, doesn't it? It reminds us that, like, the legal world is all interconnected, and understanding how different areas of law can intersect and affect each other is super important.
Oh, absolutely. It reminds us that as lawyers, we can't just operate in our own little silos. Even if you specialize in one area, you're going to encounter issues that touch on other areas of law. You might even need to team up with colleagues who have different specializations to get the job done.
Like, imagine a real estate lawyer handling a partnership dispute. Suddenly, they might need to brush up on bankruptcy law or vice versa.
Exactly. In Rafulton is a perfect example of how those lines can blur. It encourages us to step back and look at the bigger picture and understand that the law is this complex, dynamic system where everything's connected.
And it also underscores the importance of lifelong learning for legal professionals. The law's constantly evolving, new precedents are set, and you never know when different areas of law are going to collide in unexpected ways.
So true. You know, on the surface, In Rafulton might seem like a very specific case, just about this one trucking partnership in Tennessee, but the lessons we can learn from it are relevant for anyone working in law, from seasoned attorneys to law students who are just starting out.
It reminds us that the law isn't just some abstract set of rules. It has real-world consequences. It impacts people's lives and livelihoods every single day.
Well said. And with that, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into In Rafulton. We've really done deep, haven't we? We've looked at the facts, we've broken down the legal complexities, and hopefully we've provided some valuable insights for lawyers and anyone involved in a partnership.
We hope you've enjoyed this journey with us, exploring how partnership law and bankruptcy proceedings can intertwine. And we hope we've emphasized how important it is to have clear documentation and those well-structured agreements.
Remember, the legal landscape is always changing, so stay informed, stay engaged, and keep exploring.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. Until next time, keep learning and keep diving deep into the fascinating world of law.